Good evening. Take your Bibles and turn to the book of Joshua. I'm reasonably certain I'm going to chapter 1. present a few lessons from Joshua. I've been reading through the book with a group of guys and enjoying it. And so, a lot of times when that happens, I get lesson ideas. So I'll be doing that. I ordered a commentary, and it hasn't come yet. So if there's any mistakes in the sermon tonight, I'm going to blame Amazon.com and UPS for that. So that's my excuse to let myself off the hook there. Joshua chapter 1, I'm going to read verses 1 through 9. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, into the land that I am giving to them, to the people of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you, just as I promised to Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites to the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, for you shall cause this people to inherit the land that I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, being careful to do according to all the law that Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may have good success wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened, and do not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Several years ago, there was a television show on that I really enjoyed, and the show was called Lost. I'm sure some of you have seen that or at least heard about it, but I was always struck from the very first week when I watched it at the way that the show began. It began with a complete scene of chaos on the beach after a major plane crash had stranded a whole bunch of survivors who were trying to save as many people as they could and figure out what was actually happening. And as the show went on, the first episode was 2 hours, they began to reveal this sense of the people really being in over their heads. They had no idea where they were. They had no idea what had happened. They had no idea what was going to happen. But already the show was painting the picture that they were going to have to figure out pretty quickly that they were facing a brand new situation, that they were looking at a brand new horizon, if you will, that there was going to be a brand new beginning. They weren't going to be able to count on or expect anybody to come and save them. They were going to have to be able to start over and save themselves. I think that the reason that that show became so popular is because the symbols and the analogies in it mirrored people's real lives, that they felt as though they themselves were lost and they themselves were at a place of a new beginning or a new horizon, and that image appealed to them. The first time I had spent any kind of extended time away from home was, other than summer camps and so on, was when I went to college. And obviously, as I mentioned this morning, most of you know I'm from Ontario, and I came to college over here in Michigan, and so it was my first time really being away from home, and it was a brand new horizon for me. It was a brand new situation, being in a foreign country, and learning different things and having to get to know different people because I didn't know anybody when I came over. And so it was a brand new situation. When we face a new horizon or a new situation in our lives, it becomes an opportunity for us to take stock of the past, to look at where we've been, what we've learned, and then to move confidently into the future. We see this all the time when maybe in our lives we take on a new job. And this new job becomes an opportunity for us to think about what we've learned in our old jobs, what we need in some cases to do to get better, what we'd like to see with our career and so on. And we think about the successes and failures that we've had, and we use the new job as a way to start thinking about our future, to start thinking about the new horizon that we're looking into and beginning to walk towards. The experience is the same when we start to think about, for example, a new house, or maybe some new friends, or anything new that comes into our lives. In the Bible, and we mentioned this morning, we have a pretty strong image of what it means to have a new beginning or a new horizon in our spiritual lives. The Bible is very clear that when we turn to God and give our lives over to Christ, that we move from an old life into a new life. And it's a new life that we can read about in the Bible and we can hear other people talking about it, but until we experience that new life for ourselves, we don't always know what to expect. And so when we think about our conversions and our life after conversion, we see that we've probably had to do some learning and some growing because it has been a new horizon. It's been a new beginning, and we've had to learn in some cases as we go. But even in the Old Testament, we see some of this, and that's the theme I want to have for us tonight as we think about the situation that Joshua was in. The transition between Moses and Joshua represents a new beginning or a new horizon for Israel. It was something brand new. It was something totally different for them. Moses had been the leader of the Israelites for 40 years. He had been with them through thick and thin, through many different problems, through many different circumstances. He'd been with them as they stumbled throughout the wilderness as a result of the sin that they had engaged in. He saw them when they were faithful to God, and he saw them at their worst when they were very, very unfaithful. But now they've come right up to the point of entering the promised land. And as we know, Moses was at this point barred from entering the promised land. He was not going to be able to go. And so Joshua, his servant or his assistant, takes over at this point. And after the death of Moses, and after the death of an entire generation of Israelites who were unfaithful to God in the desert, the scene is set for Joshua and this new younger generation to move into the promised land, to walk into the unknown, to go into this new horizon that they had heard talked about for so long. They had heard all about, that they expectantly waited for, that they put their hope and their trust in God about, and yet it was new and it was unknown. And so God raised up Joshua and sent Joshua in as a new leader for the people of Israel into this new horizon, and he gave him some instructions for the people to follow. The first thing I want us to see when we think about Joshua and the leadership that he was doing here is that even though Joshua is a new leader, and even though he's taking Israel into a new situation, there's a lot of continuity with Moses. There's a lot of continuity, but it does close out one era and open the door on a new era. If we look at chapter 1, verses 1 and 2, Joshua makes this pretty clear. The book opens by letting us know that Moses has at this time died, and these events are going to take place after his death. The era of Moses is being closed off. The era of Joshua is being opened up. The instructions to Joshua coming directly from the Lord in verse 2 are that Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise and go over this Jordan. And we can see that sense of connection that's there. We know from what we know about the Old Testament or from reading it that Moses was not going to be able to lead the people into the promised land. He had become angry while in the desert, and God had given him some instructions by which to appease the people with some of their grumbling, but Moses took it upon himself to take a step further. And in his anger, he acted rashly, and as a result of his disobedience, God told him, you won't be able to enter the promised land. And so they come right up to the edge. But it wasn't going to be for Moses to lead the people in. And that's why God says in verse 2, Moses is dead. Now, therefore, arise and go over this Jordan. It's for Joshua to take the people down that road. It's for Joshua to be the next leader who takes the next step with the people. It's the fulfillment of a promise. It's the fulfillment of a promise that was made long ago by God when he spoke to Abraham and promised Abraham that there would be land for his descendants. And over these years, these hundreds of years that have taken place between Abraham and Joshua, we see that God has slowly been fulfilling his promise to Abraham, but now he's about to fulfill it in a way that brings completion to it. We know that in the Bible, God promises things, and sometimes he appears to be slow in answering them. At other times, he fulfills his promises quickly. But at this stage, it may have looked like it was taking a while, and the people may have wondered at times, why are we wandering in circles in the wilderness, in the desert? Why have we come up right to the edge of the promised land, but we can't go any further? But we see now that through Joshua, God is going to lead his people into the promised land, into the fulfillment of the things that he promised. And this goes back all the way to the promise that God made to Abraham, and frankly, even earlier, when God created a place for his people to dwell in the Garden of Eden. But because of sin, they were expelled from the garden. And from then on, they needed a place to be, a place to go, a place to call their own. And God promised that to Abraham, that would be the case one day. And now in Joshua, that promise is going to become true and complete and fulfilled. And yet, it's something new for Israel. It's something that they'd never experienced. It was something that maybe they didn't know how to transition into or how to find their way through. And so what were they to do? How were they to follow God into the unknown? And so God gives Joshua several instructions, several commands. He says three times in verses 6, 7, and 9 that the Israelites should be strong and courageous, that they should not be fearful about what they were going to be doing. Everything that Israel was going to do was something that God had told them to do. And over the history that they had, I think that they should be able to see one thing pretty clearly, and that is that if God told them to do something, then they were going to be able to do it. It was only when they tried to do things that God hadn't told them to do, or when they tried to improvise on what God had told them to do and do it their own way, that they ran into problems. But every time they actually did the things that God told them to do, they found that they were successful. And so on the basis of their past history with God, the word coming from God to be strong and courageous should have been an encouraging word, a reminder, if you will, from God, that God is going to be with them, and that they don't have any reason to be fearful. If God had brought them out of Egypt in such a miraculous way, and if he had led them through the wilderness, and if he had led them through the wilderness with the plan that he had, and if he had brought them right up to the edge of the promised land, and if he was now raising up a new leader who was going to take them over the edge and into the promised land, that very land that had been promised to them that they could now see, then the words "be strong and courageous" should have been a rallying call and a call for them to be encouraged. God also told Joshua, the Israelites through Joshua, twice to be careful to do all of the law. By this point, obviously, they had the law. They had the Ten Commandments. You can go back and read about that in Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and again in Deuteronomy. And that's what God is referring to here when he gives these instructions to Joshua. And he tells them that they need to be careful to do all the law. And there's actually three parts to this command that God is giving to Joshua. There's the carefulness of it, the being diligent to know what the laws are, what the commands are, to think through them, to not live in such a casual or haphazard way that at the end of the day, we don't even know really what we did, and we couldn't point to any examples where maybe we should have kept some commands, but we didn't because we just didn't know about it, or we didn't think about it because we were so busy that we didn't leave any time to think about what it is that God wanted us to do. And so there's the carefulness aspect of it. When God says to Joshua, for example, in verse 7, being careful to do according to all the law that Moses, my servant, commanded you. The second part of that is the actual doing of it. It's not enough for us just to know what God's commands were. It wasn't enough for Israel just to know what God's commands were. They knew what God's commands were at various times when they were in the wilderness, but they failed to do the things that they knew, and it led to problems between them and God. So they need to be careful to actually do the commands of God that they know. And then the third aspect of that is that they ought to do all the law that Moses, my servant, commanded. God did not want them to be going through the law and erasing parts of it and deciding not to do this one or not to do that one. They needed to be careful to actually do all that had been commanded to them in the law. The third thing that God told Joshua is to keep his words always before them. And he says this in two ways. He says, don't let it depart from your mouth and meditate on it day and night. I think that that second aspect is maybe easier for us to understand. When God talks to Joshua about meditating on the law day and night, he has in mind, I think, that the books of the law would be something that would be continually read before the people, that when they would gather, they would have parts of the law read to them, that they would be expected to remember the things that they heard so that when they went back to their homes, they could think through these things. When they went to worship, they could think through the things that they had heard, that they were learning, and so on. But when he says, don't let it depart from your mouth, I think there's a reason he uses that idea of the mouth. I think he uses that idea deliberately. I think he means he wants them to teach these things to others. It's not just enough for them to hear it, but he wants it to be on their lips. He wants them to be able to teach so that perhaps when they hear the law read at some kind of public assembly, they can then go home with their families and teach their children, because the words of the law are not departing from their mouth. They're always there. They're always ready to be spoken about. They're always ready to have somebody say something about. And so God has talked to Joshua about being strong and courageous, about being careful to do all the law, about keeping the words of God before him at all times. And he says, if you do these things, you will be prosperous and successful in the land. And so God is telling Joshua basically the secret of success. If you will do the things that I've told you to do, then you will be prosperous in the land. An example of this, if we turn over to chapter 5, verse 12, is just this tremendous report of the grace that God gives to his people. They are, in verse 10 of chapter 5, they are keeping the Passover that God had required of them. And then in verse 11, it tells us, and the day after the Passover, on that very day, they ate of the produce of the land, unleavened cakes and parched grain. And then this in verse 12. And the manna ceased the day after they ate of the produce of the land. And there was no longer manna for the people of Israel, but they ate of the fruit of the land of Canaan that year. That's just a description of God's provision for the people, of his grace for them. All throughout the wilderness wandering, they received manna as a gift from God so that they would have enough to eat. But now that they're on the edge of the promised land, and in chapter 5, now that they've gone into the promised land, there's going to be enough there to take care of them. They'll have no more need for the gift of manna because they now have the gift of having enough in the land. That's the point at which God has brought them to, a land where they'll be fully taken care of. And that's what he means when he says, if you'll do these things, you'll be prosperous and successful. And so he spelled out for them what it is that they need to do, what it is that he's asked them to do in terms of being strong and courageous, being careful to do all the law, keeping the words of the law before them at all times so that they'll be prosperous and successful in the land. But then God goes even a step further than that. And he promises that he will be present with them. And he does this twice in verses 5 and 9. He says, for I, the Lord, am with you. And he promises his presence. He gives it as the rationale for them to be strong and courageous. He's not sending them into a land and then backing away himself to run an experiment and see what happens. He's going with them. He says, I am with you. He says, I will not leave you. He says, I will not forsake you. So we see God promising to be with his people if they do the things that he's commanded. And then in verse 9, he reminds them of his actual command. He says, have I not commanded you? And the fact that he brings this up isn't brought up so that he can remind them of these things as though they were some kind of disobedient child that he's saying to them, I think I've told you about this 8 times already. Why are you doing it again? He's reminding them that if he's commanded them to do these things, he's also promised to be with them. And they can be assured of God's presence. They can be assured that he'll be with them. And this is a promise of assurance and continuity with God. God will fulfill his promises, and they can be confident going forward knowing that God will be with them. His examples of assurance are seen in verses 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. 5 times God promises to be with them, to help them, to bless them. And so as we think about Joshua tonight, I wonder if we can follow the spirit or the tone of the same instructions that God gave the Israelites through Joshua. I wonder if when we think about the new horizons and the new beginnings in our own lives that God has for us, I wonder if we can think about the same things that God told Joshua. I think the first step for us would be to take seriously the teaching that God gave to us in the book of Joshua about paying attention to his word, about emphasizing his word, about thinking about it, reading it, not letting it depart from our mouth, meditating on it day and night. This idea of knowing the word for ourselves so that we can draw strength from it and know the promises of God that are within it, that he will never leave us or forsake us, so that we can feel that confidence for ourselves and then teach that to others, so that we can observe and do the commands of God, so that we can know those commands and be careful ourselves to actually do the full will of God, all that he's commanded, not the few things that we like and the many that we don't, so we just don't worry about them until we hear about them someday and then have to deal with it all over again, but to actually know the whole will of God so that we can be careful to do it. And I think we can take an idea from this notion of being prosperous and successful in the land. We know that what God meant by that was not some kind of cheap way of the people gaining all sorts of fame and fortune apart from him, but that the success and prosperity that they would receive were part of God's plan for them. That through their rising up in this new land, that they would somehow become a beacon of light to the nations around them. And that through the success that God gave them, they might be a blessing to the nations around them. And that through that success, there might be a way that some people, some nations, would come to know God. I wonder if we can apply that to ourselves by thinking about the roles that we play within God's plan. Knowing that we live between Jesus' resurrection and ascension and his return, and that God has a plan in place where he is looking to save the whole world and the people within that world, and what is our role to play in that? We only know that by reading the Bible and knowing what it is that God's plan is, but is there a way that we can think about our prosperity and our success within God's plan by thinking about how it is that we can serve him, knowing what it is that he's done for us? And so when we think about the grace that we have received, let that not become something that we just tuck away to feel good about, but let that be an encouragement that if God has been so good to us, as I talk about a number of times, Scripture teaching us in Romans 5 that while we were God's enemies, Christ died for us. If God was so good to us and giving us grace while we were his enemies, then is it not fitting that we would turn around and respond to him with tremendous gratitude to find our roles within his plan and then to carry those roles out to the best of our ability? Think for a moment if we adapted what God says to Joshua, even though it's ancient and he's talking to people that are going to go into a land and try to conquer it with some kind of military victory. We don't have that situation today for Christians. But think about if we could adapt these instructions or these directions to our own lives, if we became as serious about the Word of God as God told the Israelites to be through Joshua, if we became as attentive to fulfilling the will of God in our lives as God expected the Israelites to be as Joshua was leading them, if we focus just on those two things, imagine the spiritual strongholds that we could conquer, that we could take. Imagine the metaphorical land that we could overcome if only we were strong and courageous in doing God's will and in keeping His commands. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation tonight, we'd encourage you to do so by coming forward as we stand and sing our last song.